If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM, let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Take a pause from your to-do list with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
It's 3:15 a.m. in Pacifica, and you're listening to Night Call.
Hello and welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. I'm Molly Lambert, and here with me in Los Angeles is
Tess Lynch, and over in New York we have
Emily Yoshida.
And joining us today, also from Los Angeles, we have a very special guest, Rachel True.
Hi. Actually, I'm from New York, but I live here, and I'm a night owl, so thank you for having me on Night Call.
Wow, this is like a broadcast-only accent. Like, this is great. I love it.
I was just in New York, and I literally turn into your Jewish grandpa when I'm in the East Coast. That's my actual patois, to be honest.
Were you at Russ and Daughters?
No.
What were you doing?
What was I doing?
No whitefish.
You might have heard I put up a little bit of something on Twitter a couple months ago or not about being excluded from something. So I went and did an event last month that I forced people to invite me to. And
well,
it turned out well for everyone.
Yeah. Can we talk about that at all?
A little bit. I'm sure it's really boring. But
no, it's not boring at all.
Yeah.
So Rachel was talking about how there was a convention, a horror convention, that was supposed to be a reunion of The Craft, which Rachel is in, an integral member of the coven.
Rochelle.
In. And they invited all the other girls and not her. And she called them out on Twitter, rightfully, saying, hey, you guys didn't invite the one black girl in the group to be part of the group. And like this used to happen during the press tour. When the movie came out.
First of all, I didn't know people read my tweets. Okay. That is how I learned that people actually read my tweets. I didn't really think nobody cares about my tweets. So I was very surprised that people responded and it resonated with them. And let me be clear, too, because conventions are, you know, this sort of world where you go and you meet people and you sign autographs. And it's very surreal. Mm-hmm. The first one I did, literally every picture, I'm like, why are you touching me? So then. I haven't done terribly many, but with this particular one, the party line was, no, Rachel, it's not a reunion. we just had Nev's there because of Scream. Feruz is just there because she was supposed to be there the year before. And Robin, who's never done another horror movie, is there because it's her first one. But it's not a reunion. And if it was, of course we'd want you there. I heard this from so many fucking people
I finally crazy.
Well, what I finally said is, yeah, you know why it's not a reunion? Because you fucking won't invite me. Oh, can I swear?
Yes. Absolutely.
I'm a New Yorker. I'm going to try to be better. But I had to explain to lots of my fabulous white friends, too. No, it's you're missing the point. It would be a reunion if they would invite me. So now what happened was I gave them a huge headline. Tons of people showed out. Everybody made a lot more money because we were all there. And part of my thing, too, is when I go to these events, I haven't done very many. I'm the only black person there. I'm the only black person everywhere I go. The last one that I just did, which they were kind enough to invite me after I might have twisted a few arms. I was the only black woman. And then there was an 8-year-old black child there who did an episode of something. And that was it. So I do feel now that I'm an old lady, I can speak out about things because I'm Gen X, you know, and I was taught, be quiet. Don't worry about it. As long as it's not too overt and in your face, just deal with it. You know, as a black person, mixed person growing up, I mean, it was my white dad and black stepmom were like, listen, this is how it is. You're going to be treated terribly. And you just suck it up. I think it's just, I took a page from the millennials book and I was like, I'm going to whine in public about this. and I think that it was probably good to bring awareness, not just for me, but for other people. There's so many other people in my same boat.
Well, Tess and I are huge fans of The Craft. It was one of the reasons we became friends.
Yeah,
I know. I know. So is Emily. Tess and I mean, just like we saw it together probably for the first time.
Yeah.
You were like, two. Yeah. Did you guys notice that our skirts got shorter as our powers got stronger?
As they should.
I do remember hearing an interview with Andy Fleming, the director on NPR, years back in the day, and he was like, oh, you know, it's a metaphor for female sexuality. And that's so true, I think, as we become women, right? From tween to teen
it's
to
a metaphor.
Girl to woman, all those things. There's so many new things circulating in us and new ideas and thoughts and what we can do. And so I think that the witchcraft is a perfect analogy for it. And actually, I was talking to Fairuza Balk, who plays Nancy, in The Craft the other week, and she said something to me really kind. Like, people always say I look young. I don't look young at all.
I'm super young.
I'm going to be on a couple episodes of Better Things where you'll see me looking like every inch of an adult that I am.
Oh, that's awesome. You're going to be on Better Things.
I love that show. So Fairuza goes, you look really young. And I was like, oh, girl, it's the glamour. And then we just started trading lines from the movie. And there was something really cute about that, like almost a quarter of a century later.
Well,
you know?
I think that long. How often do you see a movie with like four female protagonists at all? You know?
And I guess you're right.
Part of the reason the movie is so good is because you're in it and your storyline is like very interesting.
No, I appreciate that because I cop to this fully. I'm in a documentary that is so good, you guys, on Shudder.com, which is owned by AMC. And it's called Horror Noir. It's based on a book written by a college professor called Robin Means Coleman. So it's already a more erudite take on this. It's not just, here's a slasher film, who's going on? It's not a chronological order, just that. It is the reflection of black people in films. And so being in that, I cop to the fact that when I got The Craft, I remember thinking, and this is sort of mortifying for me, but I remember thinking, oh, well, she's burned and she's crazy and she tried to commit suicide. What's my problem? I don't have a problem. Racism. Yeah, that's a given. It's a given that people are going to be horrible and racist to me. No, what is my actual problem? And I remember then thinking, do they think blackness is my problem?
Why does she get punished at the end? Like, she didn't do anything wrong with her powers. Like,
that's actually true. I didn't. Yeah. And, you know, I had a scene with my parents that was cut, which is kind of too bad because everyone else has parents. But don't worry, they didn't have any dialogue, so it doesn't matter. I remember my dad, the actor, being like, can you get us a line? And I was like, I'm trying to keep my own, sir. So it's interesting now to then, like, things have changed. Yeah. I mean, at the time, I had to really fight to be included in that movie. You know what I mean? To get to read for it. So
that's so crazy.
And it's such a, like, huge, like, I don't know, it feels like a big, like, how far we've come, but also, I guess, how much we still have to do, like, with us being such a huge thing this weekend, like, as far as, you know, representation in horror, and also not having having it be, you know, like the horror doesn't necessarily have to do with race in it. It's like it's about a bunch of things. It's about a family. It's about
in a horror noir. There's a line from Blackula, which is a 70s black exploitation version of Dracula, right? And Blackula turns one of his friends, and he's a very smooth count, and he turns his friend into a vampire. And the friend looks in the mirror, and he's like, "What is a man if he cannot see his own reflection?" And that, I think, is mm-hmm. such a beautiful analogy yeah. for how black people in America mm-hmm. felt for a long time in terms of cinema.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, can't see, even me growing up, like, right. I can't see my reflection anywhere. Who is the person who looks like me? So I'd really gravitate, of course, towards that one person of, like, I remember being fascinated with The Courtship of Eddie's Father, which was actually before my time, but in repeats, because there yeah. was an Asian woman on it. Somebody different. Somebody right. was
yeah.
other.
Yeah.
You know. Anyway.
By the way, when does this documentary come out?
Oh, it's out already.
Okay.
It's streaming yeah. on a platform called Shudder.com.
And it's horror noir.
Yes.
And they have been showing it in New York, and I think they were showing it at BAM.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of making its rounds around the different art houses and stuff and independent theaters in New York. Yeah.
It's funny, like, I did the documentary, and then they were like, we're having a premiere. And I just thought, oh, it's going to be some little tiny thing. And they had a real premiere and everything. And I was like, a press line, which if you're a woman and you don't know there's a press line and then you have to do a press line, it's a little traumatizing. Yeah. Horrible. So then I go in
yeah,
and watch the documentary,
warning.
And it's great. And I'm a realist. I wouldn't sing this high praise of it if I didn't actually hadn't learned so much from it. Mm-hmm. And it pointed out beautiful art house films made by black people that I hadn't heard of. So I'm thrilled. Yeah. To be a part of that.
That's awesome.
Cool.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it feels like horror is having a moment of, like, you know, social horror makes a lot of sense because it's like, you know, for horror to be about something rather than just sort of like scaring you.
Yeah.
Like, torture porn was so big during.
Well, that makes sense after 9/11.
That's what I was just
when you
say.
Think about it.
It's the most appropriate
even the
form.
Superhero thing, yeah. which I'm fucking over.
I know.
Unless
I know.
You want to put me in one. Then I'm just so cool with it. But that's a reaction to 9/11. And it's, you know, 20 years later. And I feel like that genre, I mean, I get it as a parallel for us. But I kind of, maybe because I'm a grown-up in Gen X, like I really miss 90s indie movies.
We have been talking. Talking about erotic thrillers.
That's why we went on the erotic thrillers bandwagon.
Yeah. Just all that stuff because we're like, oh, these movies are about like grown-ups having problems.
Yeah. They're about like interpersonal problems.
Fatal Attraction in particular was like the most just intimate, like, you know, scaled down horror film in a lot
of
ways.
That's true. That is a horror when you think about
it.
It's
a psychological horror movie.
It's more
even
troubling.
Us. You wouldn't if you were a hardcore horror fan. You're going to be like, is that horror? You're right. Just like Get Out. You're not going to be entirely sure, but there are different veins of horror.
Yeah.
Many veins of horror.
Yeah.
And as much as I feel like the elevated horror or like, you know, thinking person's horror, I'm using like heavy scare quotes over that. Is like there's been like a lot of great things that have come out that I guess you could file under that banner. But I feel like there's still so much to be done with like just like. Scaring people in like different contexts and different cultural contexts, and like, you know, like I feel like there's a lot of room for
innovation. That genres, like, you always think like fringy genres where you can experiment more should theoretically like be more experimental in terms of like who gets to make movies, like something like horror or
well, what's interesting to me, I guess, coming from my Gen X perspective, is I thought once, you know, there was a little a video camera in everyone's hand that we would have more of a revolution in filmmaking.
Yeah, it was like Blair Witch.
Yeah,
and that was it.
But like, kind of, or you know, Sean Baker shot Tangerine on an iPhone, I think. But I'm just surprised there aren't more and more and more people doing that because we have the means. And my note to people is, you can have a kind of fuzzy video. You know, you can shoot on an iPhone, but your sound better be tight as fuck.
Yeah.
No, really, right? Your sound should be tight because then people will stick with it even if the picture is a little mushy. But I want to sidebar and give you some praise because I don't remember why I started following you, but I know I read stuff by you. We have people in common that we know, but I just loved your New Yorker article on your grandma and the novel.
Oh, yeah, Molly, if anyone out there missed it, you've got to look up
Molly. It's such a good article.
Yeah.
It's really just so well well written. And then also, like, I loved it already. And then you had me, you got me when you grandma's favorite people were Serena. And I was like, yes, 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 she's an athlete. She knows. So, you know, that's kind of why I probably started following you. And then I found out we had some writer friends in common and things
like
that.
Well, I've always been a fan of your work. Rachel's also in Half Baked, another movie
that so dumb.
Yeah. No, it's amazing.
It's great. So dumb. It is really like funny.
You were in, like, you know, you're in The Craft, you're in Half Baked, you're in a Gregor Rocky movie. Like, these are all movies that have a lot of, like, cultural cachet with everybody we know.
I like to be in culty things that nobody really sees. No, but you know what hit me the other day or a while back was, like, I was like, oh, you know, I may not have been in this, that, or the other thing, right? But I was in these weird things that people know the names of. Yep, like, people call me Rochelle and Mary Jane and Mona from my TV show. Like, there's discernible names that people can attach to me. And I thought, that's kind of cool,
It's cool. Really cool.
And it's the kind of stuff that, like, now, especially, like, kids even younger than us, like, the generation below us, it's the stuff that they're all Googling because they've heard somebody mention it and it, like, has this aura around it. And they're like, oh, I need to, like, go look up all those Googles.
Well, speaking of Gregor Rocky, he's got a TV show out now, I think on Starz, with the same alien from nowhere. but what I loved about that Gregor Rocky movie was, again, those weird indie things back in the day where we got a barn, we're making a movie. And what Greg did with just paint, for example, when you look at the walls in that movie and the backdrops are so gorgeous, it's all just really inexpensive stuff. So when people, because for instance, like I dated a guy for a minute who he's a great guy, but he's like Eeyore. I'd be like, hey, I got an idea. Let's shoot this thing. And da-da-da. And he'd be like, well, you know, because, and so we broke up. But I just know that, like, I'm like, you got a barn, you can do it. And I love that attitude of, like, let's just try and see what we get. Yeah. And those images, like that image of me up against the wall in Nowhere, that's amazing. I wish I looked like that. I mean, I don't think I didn't look like that, but it's neat to see.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Becky, Oscar, Mike, Bravo.
Hey, folks. If you love true stories about extraordinary life experiences, we think you'll love the Risk podcast. Risk is the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. Stories too uncensored for public radio. On Risk, nothing's too intimate or too strange. Like the one about the guy who got kidnapped by the drug cartel, or the girl who discovered she was living with a cannibal, or the woman who learned the person she was sharing kinky fantasies with online was her dear old dad. You'll hear real people sharing about life experiences so funny, so scary, so mystifying, you won't believe your ears. Find it all at riskshow.com or just search on your podcast app for Risk. That's RISK exclamation point or risk-show.com.
I want to hear about Rachel's other, would you say it's like your moonlighting job or your other career, your career of the night?
Well, you know, I do a few different, here's what I always try to say. I do many, many, many different things. And so I think there was a moment there where people trying to pigeonhole me as, she's quit acting. And she's, no, I do many things.
Right.
Also, sidebar too, I had a, you know, after my TV show ended, I had a major illness, which nobody, I know people don't want to talk about. People, nobody wants to hear that you were anything but perfect and perfect looking, right? I had a very common thing that white women called tumors and black women call fibroids.
Yes.
And I think the distinction is interesting because black women are like, no big deal. And every white woman I've ever met is like, I have a tumor and I'm dying. I'm like, so basically I was riddled with these things inside and out. I looked 8 months pregnant. I could barely walk. I could barely breathe, actually.
Yeah. Oh,
I let it go too far. It was a benign condition that I didn't, because the doctor said, black lady, don't worry about it. It's very common. Don't check it. And that's why I'm talking about it on this podcast, because black women, if you have fibroids or white women, any women, it can affect your fertility. It can affect first of all, insane from the hormone imbalance. As well, you do not get that without a severe hormone imbalance.
Yep.
So, cut back to my other things that I do are just things I've always done my whole entire life. But yes, when I went through a period of being, you know, again, in this town, if you were anything but perfect, people back away from you. Mm-hmm. So when I wasn't feeling, you know, wasn't really healthy and feeling well, it was just an odd time. And I had to redecipher who I was and what I was based on myself, not outside. So I just got back into the stuff I've always done, like as a small child. But I was in foster care from 0 to 4, right? Then my dad eventually came and got us, my white dad, with his new black wife. And he had this huge bookcase that I called the library. And the book, when you're four, it looks like a library. So the books, and I could read a little bit. My stepmother taught us to read. And the books I would pull down were Nietzsche's Beyond Good and Evil and Carl Jung's Man and His Symbols. So was I actually reading the books? I doubt it. I could read a couple words here and there, right? But I was very drawn to the pictures and the covers and the things, the concepts of good and evil. What is that? What is beyond what I could see at 4 years old? And I also felt like I was super intuitive even at that age. I felt like at that age I could kind of look at someone, kind of know what they were thinking, and it made them very uncomfortable. So cut to someone gives me a tarot deck like when I'm eight, and I'm like, oh my God, it's the same. It's the same language as those books. It's what Carl Jung was talking about. It's all interrelated.
Do you remember which deck it was?
I think it was just a basic Rider-Waite deck. So which should be called the Rider-Waite Smith deck, because what the artist, Pamela Coleman Smith, who has there's a book out about her, and Mary Kay Greer, who is one of the people I gravitated towards her tarot books back in the day, is one of the authors of that. So I became interested in tarot because of that. And I was always interested in weird esoteric. I'm a Scorpio. So it just was a natural extension. This is like my little catchphrase for tarot. And I've had this my whole life, which is it's kind of like a shrink in a box. Yeah. You know, it's literally a way to go, what's happening? Carl Jung says the best way to predict the future is to determine how the present evolved from the past. So is there a little magic and mysticism in the tarot? Absolutely. But really, it's just a very practical way, because I can look at an image and it evokes an emotion, a visceral emotion in me, and you're going to have a completely different reaction to that. So that's kind of where I think there's the magic of tarot.
It's interesting because I showed my son, who's almost seven, a tarot deck recently, and his reactions to the cards were really interesting.
Really?
I mean, just some of the darker cards, he was like, oh, this is really cool. This is really powerful, which is really what a lot of them mean. But to me, I'm like, oh, shit.
But that this kid resonated with the image. You know, nobody needs to have explained here. It's the visceral feeling. So to me, I became interested in tarot because of that. And then, coincidentally, before I got the craft, like, this is actually a true story. Like, about 9 months before that script landed in my lap, my TV broke. So I just really delved into tarot studies. Like, I have notebooks and notebooks of, you know, just my thoughts and my my layouts and my readings and all those things. And so when the script showed up 9 months later, I was like, I think I'm ready for this shit. And if anyone's going to be a black witch, it's me. So cut to, again, after I was sort of recovered, you know, I remember like disassociating from my body, floating up to the ceiling as I spread out on the couch. Right. And that was my clue to get back in my body, get healthy again. And that is why I appreciate when people say you look good or you look because I fucking work for this shit. And I do attribute tarot to helping me get through some of those more difficult moments, you know. And then I was supposed to play Marie Laveau in a movie. I'd read cards for myself and my friends for years and years and years, but I'd never read for, like, strangers, you know what I mean? Like, so I was like, all right, I'll go, you know, do some tarot at House of Intuition. And it was fucking interesting. So people would come in and be staring at me. Hopefully that movie will come back together, because it fell apart in prime indie style.
No.
As they're want to do.
By the way, House of Intuition is in Echo Park, right?
Sure.
I think it's a, there's a few. There's one on Melrose, actually.
Oh, nice. And right near.
They have
a
few, but they were actually really strange with me. We were supposed to develop a product together and stuff, and we didn't. And so eventually I just
gotta
was
do
like,
your own.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I'm saying. They got mad at me for not putting them on my Instagram, and I was like, you got your own.
Yeah.
I mean, really. Like, listen, now I can read people without the cards. And that's what I believe for everyone, is that we have intuition, right? Gut. And we're learning now how much gut bacteria and gut stuff is so important to our mental health. And so that expression, gut intuition, comes from something. And so what I love tarot cards for is helping me discern, you know, what's real, what's Memorex. Memorex is an old thing. You young kids might not know. But, you know, what's real and what do you want it to be? I think that's the hardest thing for tarot.
And what are you afraid of?
And what are you afraid of? And also, when you look at a deck, there's 78 cards, right? There's 22 major arcanas, and those carry more weight when you get them. Because, by the way, I keep forgetting to mention, I sold a book.
Yes, please.
I always bury the lead. So the exciting part out of coming out of all that with doing the tarot work was I sold a book to Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, which to me was like a big deal. You know,
it is a big deal.
I was an avid reader as a kid. I read a book a day. So now to be able to write a book and write it myself, yeah. too, not like ghostwritten like a lot of actors do, has been an interesting process. I don't know how you do it, Molly. But I'm so excited because the goal of the book, True Heart Tarot, and Deck Set, I'm designing a deck with a young Canadian artist as well, is to reach people who... You know, I think a lot of my people, my brown people, are really scared of this stuff. And I want to be like, it's just paper and cards, yeah. people, and a way to get in touch with yourself. Like, as my religious friends say, God is everywhere. God is everywhere. But then God is inside you, right? So this is a way for you to get in touch with the knowledge that God, the God inside you, can give you. That's what I hope, because so many little girls come up to me and they're like, I really want to do tarot, but my mom says the devil. And I'm like, I don't know what tarot you're doing, because I don't mess with the devil, yeah. or things
right.
like that.
It's not incompatible with Christianity. Or
right.
other.
It's not out yeah. of alignment with Christ consciousness or whatever your bag is, yeah. you know, which is not mine. Thank mm-hmm. you, parents. Yeah. But the book also has 22 memoir essays, by
cool.
the way.
Nice.
So it's for the major arcanas, from the Fool to the World. Some of those are 90s stuff. Some of those are about my life now, just, you know, different things. But boy, do you get tired of yourself when you're writing about yourself. You do. And then because it's a tarot book and I'm talking about heavy cards, I've got to cough up some stuff that, yeah. from my life that I'm not that happy about. And that, like, my devil essay, oh, I'm so mortified. But you know what? We all have done things we're mortified about, yeah. I think, you know, or maybe I'm the only one.
No, that's what it's good for. Yeah. That's why it's like psychology. It's like you have to deal with the things you don't want to deal with.
Yeah.
Well, that's the, you know, it's interesting. I was doing tarot readings for a friend of mine who was a trainer, and we did a few readings, and by the fourth or fifth reading, she was like, this is getting really difficult. This is getting harder. And I said, yeah, kind of like your workouts. And she was like, oh.
Ouch.
And I do find the more work I do with that, the more in alignment I get in other areas. Like, I've let go of, you know, like, let's say, you know, those friends we all have that we are always have confrontation with, or there's some kind of pull to them, but we talk shit about that. They're gone. Because yeah. you know what? With my friends, we want to throw roses at each other's backs. We don't want to talk shit about each other, right?
Yeah.
And I feel really great now. And it's weird because I'm old now.
You keep saying that, but Rachel, you're not old.
I wish I'd figured some of this stuff out earlier, yeah. I guess, is my lament. Do you know what I mean? Because you're right, I'm not old.
But it seems like that's why you're writing the book, because you're like, if I can pass any of
yeah,
this
exactly.
on.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope so. It's sort of like why I whinge on about health stuff on Twitter, you know, and just try to say, hey, women, like men, don't fear aging, you know, because yeah. I had a brother who passed away at 28. You know, the alternative to not being my age is being dead. So I'm fine with being my age.
Well, we talk about this a lot. Also, how old are you?
Oh, 52.
Wait,
5200. That's why I always make jokes about being a Time Lord, because sometimes I feel like I slip through time and I don't
do
even know.
You do slip through time. You yeah. are an ageless traveler. As you get older, you realize you're never going to like feel older. You're just going to like be yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
That's good you know that, because it's true. I just feel like me.
It's nothing. Comforting and disappointing.
It is comforting and disappointing, although there's different areas where I'm more mature. You know, like yeah. now I really understand. Somebody said, what did you learn from your exes? And I've learned from all of them, like, heavy is the head that wears the crown. Because this is my kingdom, so I cannot afford to let in people, places, or things yeah. that are going to mess with the flow of that. So that's nice to know as an adult. Because when I was younger, I was like, oh, you're a horrible guy? Hi. so just shifting things like that.
Well, I feel like also like the reason that people fear aging, especially women, is because like you don't see older women in movies and TV as much as you
well,
see them
yes.
in reality. And in reality, everybody knows cool women of all ages.
Right.
Yeah, and you're just like, that's normal. But then it's like, if you don't see it in movies, you start to be like, is it real?
Right,
well,
exactly.
But you guys, I went from, on my sitcom, I always played 10 years younger than I was. But anyway, after that ended and I wasn't even sick yet, all of a sudden, my BET started blasting my age every 6 months. And I was like, thanks, BET.
Yeah.
I remember in the 90s, I did an interview with them and they kept saying, I said, as a black actress, and they were like, African-American? And I was like, aren't you the black entertainment?
Right.
So, but all of a sudden, my auditions literally went from like, 35, 40-year-old woman to grandmas. And I don't know if you're familiar with the black grandma on the couch trope, right? But that's not me. Like, I'm not, oh, I'm so tired. I just got home from church, y'all. That's not me yet. It will be me soon. And could I be a grandma in real life? Absolutely.
This is what I always say about this is why women love the Real Housewives franchise, is because it's about women, like just grown older women, yeah. They're having the dumbest fights over nothing yeah. all the time. And that's like the luxury. That's why I call it like brain bleach, because I watch it.
Yes.
It's like, oh, these stupid problems that like don't matter.
But this is why Felicia Fasano's casting person for a bunch of different shows, but for Better Things, kind of hunted me down in August. But I love this show so much because it is about a grown woman. Pamela is exactly my age. So I fought the show for the whole first year and didn't watch it because I was like, oh, yeah, it's about a mother and her kids. Uh-huh, I don't have kids. I'm bad. And then I finally watched it and went, oh, it's not about a mother and her kids.
Yeah.
It's just about being a woman.
Yep.
You know, that's it's such a great show. So I'm thrilled to be a part of that. And also, let me sing her praises for how she shot that show. It was literally like working on a 90s indie film, like a Sundance indie movie. She's got four different cameras going. She's literally directing and acting in this and still has time to go, yo, somebody get Rachel a fan. She's having a hot flash. So it was incredible. It was an actor's sandbox. It's not that I'm more discerning about what I do at all. I'll do whatever. I got sucked out of a plane in Sharknado 12. You know, I don't care.
Yeah.
But to be able to do that kind of stuff is a turn on.
Well, speaking of entertainment for grown-ups, maybe the dark side of entertainment for grown-ups, in continuing our erotic odyssey. We watched the 1995 William Friedkin film, Jade, this week. And lucky for us, Rachel has also seen Jade. I don't know how recently. When was the last time
okay,
you
I
it?
Was going to do prep but yesterday, and then I was like, no.
No, it's totally no, for this.
No. No. Oh, but I have seen it.
You so. Remembered.
Yeah.
That's totally. All we need. As long as you have the impression of it somewhere in your mind.
Who
you
doesn't?
Access, like, terrible.
Had anyone ever seen Jade before other
no.
than Rachel?
I had seen parts of it. I hadn't seen the whole thing.
I had never seen it. I just knew it's legendary.
Yeah.
Legendary bomb.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a career killer for several
yeah.
people. Like, it basically, this and Showgirls was sort of the end of the
God
Esther
bless
Haas
Joe
reign,
Esther Haas, so. My favorite screenwriter of all time.
Ever.
They said they rewrote this whole script, but there was one line in there that we all know was Joe Esther Haas.
Oh, yeah. The best line, which is Crystal Beluga, Wolfgang Puck. It's a fuck house.
That sounds coke fueled, if
it's
you ask me.
It's the most 1995
oh,
thing.
Yeah. Oh, a little bit.
Listen, I got a soft spot for the 90s. So
this
I'm
is
mad
the
at
cokiest
them.
Movie. I hated this film like so much.
Was it the misogyny or the misogyny? Yay.
No. Well, we finished watching it, and I was like, I could not tell you the plot of that movie. Like, I could not tell you.
What are you right. talking about? Linda Fiorentino is the head of a ring of prostitutes.
She's Jade. Well,
she's
who will
Jade.
Give you whatever you
she
want.
She gives you whatever you want, yeah. And they're blackmailing the governor.
Did Linda Fiorentino marry, like, where'd she go? Because she's amazing,
she's
and I hope she married
amazing.
A gazillionaire.
So
and is a gazillionaire
amazing.
Herself, yeah. right? On her
she
own marriage.
I just like how Friedkin like directed her and basically everybody in this movie, but like especially her to just like talk in her very
it's an Elizabeth
lowest register.
Holmes voice.
So it's like she's
there are no
yeah, she's just like. Just like the very, very lowest you could be and still get.
But you guys
by.
Have
it's
to understand
so,
that Linda Fiorentino in the 90s.
That was
that's
her thing.
In, but that was definitely oh, her yeah. thing, talk very low. But also,
yeah.
she
yeah.
was considered very ethnic.
Well, that,
what?
Okay,
really?
Let's talk
yes.
about
really?
Let's talk about
because she's
how weird.
Italian, you know
oh,
what I mean?
My God.
Okay, that's weird, but there's also a very weird subtext
the,
in this
oh,
movie where
Asian.
You're like, why isn't she Asian? It would make
so
sense
much more
if
sense
if she was Asian.
Yeah. It feels like the ring of prostitutes should be
her
Asian.
Name is Jade, like, and the whole movie takes place in Chinatown.
No, because obviously.
And they talk. No, the whole movie takes place in Chinatown.
I forgot it was in Chinatown.
Yeah,
no,
it's and the whole thing, the whole like visual theme of the movie is
Asian
is,
stuff.
Various people running through Chinese people trying to do
yeah,
stuff, trying
yeah.
to go about their
a
business,
parade.
Do a have a parade, do their Tai Chi.
Yeah, but you guys, an Asian woman in that role would have been such a trope, right? But also just know that it was the 90s and they went, well, we could cast someone Asian, but that won't sell.
Right.
Yeah, so like, let's get someone who's right. White, but not entirely white. She's Italian. That's kind of ethnic. Yeah. Put Linda in there. That's
so,
how that went down.
By
yeah.
the way, the casting of this, several people turned down yeah. roles. I would just like to just briefly pass through. Warren Beatty turned down the role of David Corelli before it went to David Caruso. David Caruso, I blame for much of how I did not
David
like this
Caruso
film.
Is the reason this movie does not work
they
at all.
They dressed you him think? So weird. Why was but, he wearing this giant coat have, and these blousy
who wants
pants?
To fuck David Caruso.
Apologies to David Caruso.
No, sorry, David. I know
no.
lots of people want to
I don't
to
think
fuck
anybody
you.
Does yeah. in this movie, Look, to not, be fair. Like
he's not a void of sexual charisma. Oh, Chaz Palminteri is way hotter than David Caruso.
100%.
And he don't want to fuck him either.
That role was offered to Kenneth Branagh. Any takers? Hello. But then Julia Roberts and Sharon Stone turned down Katrina Gavin, which went to Linda Fiorentino.
Right.
But she was like, I'm not going to take the role unless you tone down the prostitution stuff.
Uh-huh.
So, this movie was so rewritten. And William Friedkin, super strangely, was like, I am the most proud of this movie. I have no idea why it didn't do well. He was like, I think it was maybe the Exorcist curse.
Yes, that's why.
That's
I'm
why.
I'm going to say it's because, like, listen, I remember Caruso leaving his TV show and all that. And the reason I remember is because even then, I remember thinking, motherfucker going to leave his own show and he barely charismatic. But listen, he's a great actor. I've always thought he was a tremendous actor. Yeah. I was like, it's an interesting move to leave your own lead TV show where you're making gazillions of dollars. Oh, wow. That's a luxury that white people have, huh? They can quit their high paying job. Listen, every job I've ever got, almost I have been told, you better take it or leave it. They have another black girl. So that is the world I come from. And then I'm like, this motherfucker is leaving a show. But also, in the 90s, big stars were doing adverts in Japan, you know, commercials and adverts. And big stars, TV stars, were TV was TV, film was film.
Was, yeah.
Never the twain shall meet. Yeah. You did not cross over. So it's very different than now.
It was such, but I was saying also, like, when did Clooney depart ER? Because he's the successful version of Caruso trying to leave NYPD.
But he also left it in like season 10, though. There's a difference between leaving your 2 year. My show is the hottest show on TV. Caruso, who left his hot show after two.
I
it wasn't
also
very many seasons.
I feel like David Caruso, like, he's not George Clooney. He shouldn't really. You know?
I hate that we're shitting on David Caruso.
In like one or two.
As a redhead, I'm allowed to talk about David Caruso.
You are.
And say that this is not about all male redheads.
Well, it's also the wardrobe in this movie was like, there were crimes committed.
But like, come on, the 90s, which was better than the 80s. Like, by the way, I had a bite of a sun-dried tomato the other day and I had an 88 flashback and I was like, get this out of my mouth!
Oh, we've talked about our plans to do a, like, 90s-themed cafe called Romaine Memories. Like, that's one of our side projects that we want to work on.
It.
It's all sun-dried tomatoes.
What is it
everything.
About you guys that you love that? Because you guys, I mean, listen, I'll stop saying I'm old, but you guys are younger. And what is it about that decade that you guys gravitate towards?
That now we live in
hell.
We
were younger. Oh. I think it was the thing of not really being able to participate in it fully. Like, you guys are like a couple years older than me, but I think it's the thing of like when you're on the cusp of being able to participate culturally in a decade, then you want to like you want to revisit it even more once you're an adult and you're able to.
It's also that I think, I mean, we not to load this podcast with lots of 9/11, but let's go ahead. I mean, I think you look back to your parents in the 80s and 90s and especially now and you're just like, well, my parents were my age, you know, in the early 80s.
Oh, yeah. The idea that the people in these movies are like the age that we are is like hilarious
and,
to me.
And hard.
Yeah. Like in Hand That Rocks the Cradle, I'm like, look at all these grown-ups.
Yeah. They own a house.
They must be 100.
Yeah.
I feel like I saw somebody on Twitter talking about like we're working up through the nostalgia through these different decades and we're kind of nearing the end of the run of 90s nostalgia movies and TV and everything. But it's going to be really weird to see how like TV and film reckons with any kind of nostalgia.
Yeah, what do you mean?
11? Like, what
but
does
also,
that look like?
I mean, the aughts were kind of shitty to me. I mean, I don't ever want to see another fucking juicy tracksuit in my life and all that bullshit.
I have no nostalgia for that period, as I always find
I
out.
Found it you interesting will. That I read an article about, you know, they were talking about Gen X and the silent generation, and maybe it's because they were so disappointed by all the promises of their youth. And I was like, what promises? We were the generation we were told, you will not be more successful than your parents.
Yeah.
And we were told, your life is shit, and it's going to be shit, and they were kind of right. I mean, again, what generation are you?
I'm an old millennial.
We're old all millennials. Old millennials.
Oh, I'm the oldest Gen X. Someone said to me, no, you're a baby boomer, and I was like,
no!
responding to that.
You're like, I was in a Greg Araki movie. I'm 100% Gen X.
That's what I said to her. I was like, listen, absolutely I am not. Literally the manic pixie black girl of the 90s. I am Gen X. All I knew is, like, I remember the stink moment the 80s ended for me and the 90s began was this boy asked me to be, this guy, this hot guy I was dating, who's now a famous actor, said, meet me at his house. And I go to the apartment building and I hear two doors. One door is a Billy Joel. There's people inside singing, we will all go down with the ship. And I was like, stood outside the door and I was like, oh, fuck, I shouldn't date white boy. Oh, God, what's high? I don't, do I knock on the door? And then the other door, Nirvana. Blasting Nirvana. And I was like, that's my door! And that was, you know, that to me was the end of the 80s atrocities. Yeah. Because this period of time is bringing up a lot of stuff for older people. Because I remember walking in New York City and the Anita Hill verdict came down. And I remember thinking, I don't know what's true or not. But I know as a black woman, no one's ever going to believe me. And it's really racist, isn't it? This world is really... And so then I kind of put a lot of that aside to be an actor. And now it's the same. And according to my 80-something-year-old stepmother, who's lived through, obviously, the 60s, 50s, who's a black woman from the South, she says it's worse now than it's ever been.
My parents insist that it's, like, less crazy than 1969, but I don't believe them because I'm like, I think we're at the same level at this point, at least. And they're like, you don't understand. Like, we thought everything might change. And I was like, that's how everyone feels now.
But here's what I'll say. Yeah. If I had to pick, because you guys asked me to bring my tarot cards. I use a bunch of different decks, you guys, many, many different decks. But I would say if I had to pick a tarot card, right, there's heavy tarot cards, there's gray tarot cards. But one thing I try to press in the book is I don't do reversals. I do high and low vibe, right? Mm-hmm. So even the worst cards, like the devil, has a vibe where you can start to look at your bad habits, right? You can see some good in it. And I would say the card that represents now to me is the Tower card. Are you familiar with tarot? So the Tower card, if you look at a traditional card, it's literally a reference to the Tower of Babel, really. And that is when man had the hubris to think they could build a tower up to God. And God was like, no. Bam. And and I'm going to make it so y'all speak all different languages so you can't communicate. Which is where Babel comes from, right? So the Tower of Babel is when the foundation of everything has been shaken. And in some ways, that card represents actual death, I think, more so than death card, you know? It's literal evisceration, end of something. But the other side of the Tower card that I quite like is it is spiritual enlightenment. You know, you can have this epiphany, a bolt of lightning, a spiritual thing that is just as dramatic as an earthquake, right? So I think that represents to me this time period that we're in. And again, I'm really great. I think if I was 17, I'd be losing my shit right now. I'm glad I'm old enough to step back and go, we have a racist president. We have this. We have all these things. Yeah. But I understand that things will change because a lot of instead of being reactionary, like I went, oh, my God, like I would literally be broken out in hives if I was younger now with the state of things, because that's me. I break out in hives when I get nervous. So fun for shooting, by the way. So fun. This is maybe the kick in the ass some of my white liberal friends need to stop telling me that this isn't real. And it is opening a lot of people's eyes. And personally, I think there's at least three of my white friends who owe me a apologies. You know who you are.
I am certain that you will get them.
Yes.
If not, I'll write about them in my book.
Yeah, exactly. Now you can tell people that you're going to write about them in your book.
How do you decide what to? Because I actually was like, I'm going to use pseudonyms, first of all. But do I write about this thing where someone will be able to recognize themselves in it? And it's my opinion.
I've heard that people are very bad at identifying themselves in nonfiction.
I think if you change like one characteristic, they
exactly
never guess
nobody.
It's them.
Oh, people really? Are notoriously bad at this.
If it's like a blonde person and you're like, they had brown hair, they will never.
Yeah,
know.
No, they're like, can't be me.
It's true. A friend wrote about me in their book, and I read it, and I didn't recognize myself because he was like, she wore belly shirts, and I was like, I have never worn a goddamn belly shirt.
She changed it.
You're right.
She changed the thing.
And there was enough to make me not recognize myself in this thing.
If you have a question or a comment or a tarot reading for Night Call,
give us especially a night call
at 240-46-NIGHT.
Or an email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. Also, please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. And follow us on social media, Night Call Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, and Night Call Pod on Twitter.
And you can follow Rachel True as well on Instagram.
I am True Rachel True, at True Rachel True, because this little girl won't give me my name back. And I keep saying, aren't you tired of the brothers hitting you up? She doesn't answer me, but whatever. So at True Rachel True on Instagram. And I'm most active on my stories, by the way. I love doing
Your stories are great.
I love making little shorts. Yeah, I love collages. So I do have more fun in the stories than I do on my main page. And then I'm on Twitter at Rachel True. Yeah.
Cool. Little girl didn't get her hands on that one yet.
Yeah. No, she didn't.
Pause off.
I have no chance of my name on TikTok, apparently. So
and we will talk. Well, yeah, we'll get your tarot deck when it comes out. And yeah, no,
this was awesome. Oh, yeah.
You.
True Heart Intuitive Tarot. And do you know when it's coming?
Tentatively, it's True Heart Tarot by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. And publishing is Slow as Molasses. So it'll be 2020.
Cool.
Thank you so much
for
coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was great having you.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I love this podcast. I love smart people. So I was delighted to come on and mess up your flow.
You're going to come back. You're coming back.
Yeah, come back. You're officially, we're all in the coven now.
Yep, you're in the coven.
Hashtag.
Yeah. All right, talk to you guys soon.
Bye.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.